Welcome to another edition of Shedding Lights. All summer long, it's been a different show every week. Some music, some talk, some commentary. Today, the former Stanford lecturer, Stanford student for many years, more than 26 years here on campus, now the owner of the San Gregorio store, a hotbed of political activism, along with a hotbed of acoustic music as well. George Cattermole is with us today. George, you're back. And we're going to get deep into discussion here about current events and some stuff that's on your mind and some stuff that's on my mind. But you always like to start out these segments with that poem by Mr. Ferlinghetti.
Well, yeah, and thanks for having me back. I really appreciate this opportunity. Trying to provide some balance to the Hoover Institute across the street, the Power Phallus over there.
We don't hear from them too much over here.
I wish we would.
Think we should get them to get a show or something?
Well,
maybe one day we can have you on, and then we'll get a couple of those guys over here.
Or Thomas Sowell, or bring them on.
Should we ask them to come down?
Rice,
you want to talk to them?
I'd love to have a discussion with any of those people.
We'll see if we can't set it up.
Yeah. But anyway, I always like to play this poem by Lawrence Ferlinghetti because he asked me to get it out, as he said. It needs to be heard. And I should mention... Ferlinghetti has a little book called Poetry as Insurgent Art, and it's an excellent work. And this poem that you're going to hear is an excellent example of insurgent art.
Okay, let's take a listen to it now. This is Lawrence Ferlinghetti with it's got a point of view.
Pity the Nation.
Pity the nation whose people are sheep and whose shepherds mislead them. Pity the nation whose leaders are liars, whose sages are silenced, and whose bigots haunt the airwaves. Pity the nation that raises not its voice except to praise conquerors and acclaim the bully as hero and aims to rule the world with force and by torture. Pity the nation that knows no other language but its own, and no other culture but its own. Pity the nation whose breath is money, and sleeps the sleep of the too well fed. Pity the nation, oh, pity the people, who will allow their rights to erode, and their freedoms to be washed away. My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty.
Blueberry. And that was Lawrence Ferlinghetti with Pity the Nation, courtesy of George Cattermole. George, you mentioned that Lawrence Ferlinghetti asked you to get that poem out. Is that poem recorded anywhere? Well, obviously you have a recording of it. Mm-hmm. Is that a rare recording, or did he put that out as an audio recording, or
did you do that? I found that somewhere on the internet.
Oh, okay. It is out there. Okay, so people can find it if
definitely
they want to.
Out there, yes.
Just Google Lawrence Ferlinghetti's name, and you could probably get to pull that up. Now, you have a song you want to play right now.
Well, yeah, I'd like to play again. I played this every time I've been on here. In fact, I do it because I think it really sort of captures the spirit the vibe and the real history of the Hoover Institution of the Republican noise machine we just had a big rally in Washington and what was it? It was the cross wrapped in the flag, and it smells of fascism. But anyway, this song I think sort of talks about how these people live, where they come from, what they do. It's Campfire at Bohemian Grove. It's written by George and performed by George Kinchlow, who was here last month when we were on, and we played it then, and I'd like to play it again. Dedicate this to Mr. Rumsfeld and Ms. Rice.
From Wisconsin, we gave you Joseph McCarthy and blue ribbon beer. We fabricate public sentiment, pay for a senator or a president. We get through with the immigrants, they're coming after the queers. Whistle me up a memory, take me back to better days. When the poor man was helpless and by God he stayed that way. Oh, won't you carry me back to a simpler time when Big God was king? No man had to pretend he gave a damn about his brother. You boys settle this with each other now. We got gods at every gate. Lost some ground in the labor years. We got better at selling fear. We took it back in the 50s when we got the unions on the run. Lost control somewhere in 65. We put our war on the TV. People could see it's reality. Won't make that mistake again. Whistle me up a memory. Take me back to better days. When the dark man had reason to fear, he kept in his place. Carry me back to a simpler time when Big God was king. And no man had to pretend he gave a damn about his brother. You boys sit on this with each other now. We got gods at every gate. The weak and the lazy. They were working on a 12-course meal and the dreams of the poor. They were dining on a 12-course meal and the dreams of the poor. Whistle me up a memory. Take me back to better days. When woman was a servant to man and accepted her fate. Carry me back to a simpler time when the Big God was king. No man had to pretend he gave a damn about his brother. You boys settle this with each other now. We got gods at every gate.
And welcome to another edition of Shedding Light. A little bit of music, a little bit of talk, some opinion, and free speech reigns on the Stanford campus. So we're allowed to do that here, and we thank them for that. George Cattermole is our guest, former lecturer here, anti-war protester when you were a student. Now you're the owner of the infamous San Gregorio store out at the end of Highway 84, almost to the coast, in beautiful, lovely San Gregorio, California. Now, you've got a book on the counter here, George, written by Philip Zimbardo, and he's the professor from the infamous Stanford Prison Experiment, The book is called The Lucifer Effect. And what is it about this this piece you're going to read that set this up?
Well, it's about evil. It's about terrorism. It's about torture. I wrote to Professor Zimbardo and asked him if he had any comments to make on the fact that we have now Condoleezza Rice as a fellow at Hoover, but also a professor in the political science department. And in fact, I don't know if Rumsfeld is still here, but he was at Hoover. And that I think I mentioned this the last time. This whole issue of torture, I don't think has really been dealt with fully. And I've actually had several people ask me, well, you know, what in the world do you, what do you want? What can you get from those who were responsible for a policy that permitted torture? And I guess, you know, thinking about it, maybe an apology is too much, but how about just the statement that that torture is evil, that torture is wrong, and we don't torture.
Well, what's so interesting about just what you said, they said all along that they don't, and they always agree, those folks in the last administration, they would always say, we don't torture, and we believe torture is evil, too. And along that line, Guantanamo's still open. Is it still going on, do you think?
I sure hope not. I think
well, we all hope not, but
place,
I mean...
But I don't know.
Since it's still open... You know, maybe they're not bringing new people there, but we don't really know. But Amy Goodman reported over 6 months ago that new black sites have been opened all over
that's
the
rendition
globe.
Is what's, yeah.
Yeah, and they it's not just the rendition, but you know, they have now. Apparently, the United States might have other Guantanamos that we don't know about.
Yeah. I would.
So
hope
it
not.
Could. It could. Well, we all hope that's
yeah.
true.
I'm sure that I do have trust in Obama that if he knows about this, he'll try to stop it. But of course, as we can see, he's got a lot to deal with. He's got a lot
yeah,
of people out there trying to do him in.
That's true.
A lot of very, very wealthy people. At any rate, Professor Zimbardo got back to me, and he told me that he actually discusses torture and the role of the previous administration in torture. He referred me to several passages in this book, The Lucifer Effect. And I'd like to read a passage that has to do with Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. He talks about it's important to make concrete the notion that people in positions of power and authority often reject attempts at causal situational analysis in matters of great national concern. Instead, at least in one recent instant, they have endorsed simplistic dispositional views that would have made Inquisition judges smile. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is a Stanford University professor of political science with a specialization in Soviet military. Her training should have made her sensitive to systems-level analyses of complex political problems. However, not only was that perspective missing during an interview with Jim Lehrer in his NewsHour, July 28, 2005, but instead she championed a dogmatic, simplistic dispositional view in response to her interviewer's questioning about whether U.S. foreign policy is promoting rather than eliminating terrorism. Rice attacked such thinking as excuse-mongering, and she makes it clear that terrorism is simply about evil people. He then goes on to quote her at length. And it's interesting that, she goes on. Terrorism is evil, but she doesn't really see that torture is evil. And I think his whole position here is look, don't just make dogmatic statements. I think Batman was told by Robin that evil is a very bad thing. It doesn't take us very far, but to recognize that what did happen, I think, is very, very important, that it was done in the name of this country. It definitely, I think, tarnished this country's, obviously, its image, moral standing in the eyes of the
world. You think America lost its honor when it did that?
I think we lost a lot.
So was Glenn Beck talking about that yesterday, too? Apparently not.
I'm not sure.
he didn't mention it. We're talking to George Cattermole from the San Gregorio Star, former lecturer here at Stanford, in case you just tuned in. And George, you got a real bone to pick with the Hoover Institute, Condoleezza Rice being on campus. A lot of professors did. The minute that the second that the word went out that Rumsfeld was going to come here as a Hoover fellow, I think some 250 professors signed a petition. Did you get wind of that when that happened?
I signed it, yeah.
Yeah, Stan, yeah, that must have made you proud or made you feel really good that there's a voice here on campus. You know, it's not just silent, right? You know, these people stood up. These are professors. And the main thing they said, as I understand it, was, okay, you're going to bring him here, but we don't want him being connected with Stanford University. He's not part of us. He's part of that Hoover Institute. That's a think tank on campus. Now, you mentioned something early on about Hoover writing op-eds for the New York, for the Wall Street Journal now?
Yeah, that's something that I started to look into, but there's a on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, you'll often find Hoover fellows writing there.
Really?
And I call it, somebody else, I picked this up, at the so-called Republican noise machine. There are a certain number of people that are given talking points, topics to talk about, to push. Mm-hmm. And Hoover's part of that.
Is it?
It's really, a lot of it is disinformation, exaggeration, fear-mongering. In fact, I just saw recently, I should mention a lyric in that, the song that you just heard by George Kinchlow. I heard this song for the first time years ago, and in it he has one line that says, first we'll take care of the immigrants, and then we'll go after the queers. Well, I remember when I heard it years ago, I thought, oh, come on, this country's sort of gone through that, right? I mean, we've gotten over it, right? But hey, in the last year, I mean, what are the main topics, right? Gay marriage, bashing immigrants, blaming them for just about everything. But I just saw recently now the whole argument about the mosque at Ground Zero. We have Hoover now weighing in with a Mr. Hansen, writing several op-ed pieces after another, talking about what a horrible thing this is to put a mosque, it's really near Ground Zero.
Did you hear about what happened over the weekend with the mosque in Murfreesboro, Tennessee?
No, I didn't. No.
They're building it, and it's in construction. Some of the heavy equipment that was used in the building of it was lit on fire. Hmm. And then, so there was a fire on the site, and this wasn't by accident. This was set. And there was gunshots fired around the site after that. It was reported on Democracy Now! Today, and I'm sure it's a couple other outlets. There is a sad, dark underbelly of this country that's showing right now. And what's so funny is, and Jon Stewart pointed this out on Comedy Central, it had to be on a comedy show that we heard this, but there's a strip club closer to Ground Zero than they're proposed. It's not a mosque. It's going to be an Islamic cultural center in reality. And everybody's wondering, should we call that the Ground Zero Strip Club?
Well, I think Hertzberg in the New Yorker, I think, made the best, and I think something really interesting to say about this, which is it seems that, the further away you get from Ground Zero, the more intense the objections, the louder the objections become. But that the people who actually live there or are near there are fine with it, by and large. I would say that Mayor Bloomberg, I admire him for his courage on this issue.
Yeah.
But, what did happen to freedom of religion? And again, sort of, blasting a whole faith, right, for the actions of a few. The problem is fundamentalism everywhere, right? Fundamentalism, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and unfortunately in this country, the fundamentalists are still have a very, very loud voice. And I keep telling people that it's pretty scary. I mean, 56 million, I believe, those people who voted for McCain and Palin. I think Obama got 61 million. Well, hey, that's pretty damn close. And if something were to happen to McCain, guess who'd be president right now? I mean, that's a thought experiment that I think you all ought to sort of perform. And
having a history here at Stanford, you were here during the Vietnam protests, so you got a good memory of how the United States was back then. And I remember that kids would be protesting on the street, and the construction workers from job sites had come out, the hard hats, they called them, and they beat up the protesters, dumb hippies, you know. I mean, that's what they called them back then. Amidst that climate, looking back, how do you think today's America compares to how, and it was volatile. Somebody told me they couldn't keep glass in the windows of the Hoover Institute here on campus back then because they would get broke out every day. George, you're laughing, and I don't even want to speculate what you if you had a role in that. But anyway,
I'm not laughing, I'm smiling.
Okay,
I remember that very clearly.
Yeah, and, I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on here on every campus across the country. Now, how did back then compare to now? You know, because you have a sense for both.
I think that's hard to say.
I think it was more volatile back
I
then.
Well, I can remember the history of Stanford's involvement in Vietnam. I have always said I think the reason Stanford it got out of the war, you might say, or changed its course very, very late in the game, and I think mainly because it was just costing them too much money, too much reputation.
Society
at large had pretty much turned, but mm-hmm. Stanford held on tenaciously to classified research, to participating in that war.
It was probably worth a lot of money to them.
And
the thing is about back then, it was the left that was bringing the real protest. And the right, the establishment was mostly right wing, and it was pretty much, you know, steadfastly just holding its ground and being hammered by the, you know, yeah. And it was the radical left, the kids, and you know, and then the civil rights movement played into that, and then also you had the clergy, they got involved in the Vietnam protests, Martin Luther King. Today, what we see is the country really isn't left wing. It's kind of moderate, but it's being hammered on by the right. It's the right now, the far extreme right, like the Glenn Becks and the other folks like that, that are hammering on the whole country, saying that our government's out of whack. Yeah. We lost all our honor. So it is kind of a flip script.
Well, it is, and the left has gone right, and the right has gone bonkers. I mean, that's unfortunately what's happened. And but I think a lot of it has to do. I'm just going to sound a little pedantic, but
it's okay.
But we used to teach Plato's Republic in SLE, and Plato,
what is that?
Plato has it's a prescription for a perfect state, and in it Plato talks about a cave, and where most people, he says, this is the situation most people are in, where they're really looking at really shadows of puppets, but images is the level on which most people find themselves, and he talks about the job of a philosopher is to get these people out of the cage and see what you know reality. Not the puppets are images of something, and then you're actually only looking at images of them. Well, this describes perfectly for me television, and you know I've read of a couple studies lately that have been done in Italy, and you know Berlusconi is still quite popular, and he's still the leader. In Italy,
and he owns the TV networks too, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's his wife divorced him. I think he got caught with a teenager. I mean, he's got trouble with meddling in the courts and association with the mafia. I mean, can you imagine if Obama had any of this in his recent past? But at any rate, he seems to be able to weather. No, he does. He owns all three. Of the TV stations.
Wow.
and the state TV station is of course under his tutelage, and as I understand it, pretty much hesitates to be too hard on him. And the studies have shown that the more hours they ask people, how many hours of television do you watch, and on a scale of 1 to 10, zero you hate him and 10 you love him, Berlusconi, and guess what? The more TV you watch, the more you like Berlusconi. And what's happening in this country now that the Supreme Court has ruled that money speaks, look what's happening in California. Two very wealthy women are taking on two very talented, despised by the right, women, I think often just because they're women.
They've been in office
Boxer
a long
and Pelosi
time, though.
Are now under fire.
Yeah, but those women have been in office a long time.
Brown
right?
is Jerry Brown is up against unlimited funds, it seems. But the oligarchs are basically up. You know, we're gonna buy these positions.
But hasn't America been for sale for a long time? This isn't a brand new thing, but it has reared its head in such a way. It's never been out in the open like this, right? Don't you think? It's never been so blatant before where you had a multi-billionaire going, well, I'll just throw all my money down. And in Florida last week, though, the multi-millionaire lost, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. He lost to the state congressman who's running for the Senate now, right? The multimillionaire spent, I think, some $20 million of his own money, and it didn't work, and the people didn't go for it. But it is a shame that money has such control over politics.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the, you know, I don't know, I guess it sounds pretty naive, but fair play, equal time is something I've wondered about for TV ads and so on.
Didn't they get rid of that during the Reagan administration?
But it's gone, and I really do. I mean, just turn on the TV and take a look. It's like eating at McDonald's. I mean, you've got junk food and you've got junk news. And I found interesting. You play that program Philosophy Talk.
Yeah.
Well,
two Stanford professors.
I was just leaving the philosophy department when John Perry came in, and a great guy, and he was always interested in helping me find a place in philosophy. But John, in one of his papers, has an example of not quite being in touch with oneself. As I recall, you're wandering around a supermarket with your cart, and all of a sudden you notice a trail of sugar, and so you take off trying to find to help out here and try to find out who's dropping all the sugar on the floor, to find out only that it's you. And I understand this just happened with Fox News. They were going on and on about the people who were behind this mosque near Ground Zero. It turns out that somebody who I think owns part of Fox News is a good buddy of Mr. Murdoch, who, if we could only send him back to Australia or wherever he came from. But
well, what happened was that the particular Saudi gentleman that Fox News brought up as a subject matter of a possible funder for the future Islamic Cultural Center, and they had a picture of him. John Stewart brought it up first, and the next day, Keith Olbermann of MSNBC ran with it, and then Amy Goodman reported it too. But this same gentleman that might become a funder of the Islamic Cultural Center is caught in a picture shaking hands with Rupert Murdoch, and it turns out he's the largest stakeholder in Rupert Murdoch's empire. So they're partners. So John Stewart, in a comical way, put it all together of 6 degrees of separation and went, wait a minute, Fox is funding the terror. And everybody had a good laugh over it. But it does turn out that, yeah, this. But the thing is, nobody's raised any money for the Islamic Cultural Center yet. And there's a whole, Fox is speculating on who might be. There's been no money raised yet. They're just getting into the fundraising phase. And so, yeah, it's a interesting time to be alive, isn't it, George?
Yeah, it is. It's a
you
scary
having fun?
Time. What?
Are you having fun?
Oh, I'm having fun, yeah.
George Cattermole, our guest for the hour, former Stanford lecturer, student here during the Vietnam War protests, and you took part in that, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Very definitely.
And you brought a copy of Philip Zimbardo's book, and you were reading from some of it. Is there some more you want to?
Yeah, there's just one other passage that I think is worth noting. Here in the United States of Amnesia. He actually quotes from a statement by Human Rights, and let me just read you some more history here of where we were just several years ago. As became increasingly obvious in the months after the Abu Ghraib photos, after they came to light, this pattern of abuse did not result from the acts of individual soldiers who broke the rules. It resulted from decisions made by the Bush administration to bend, ignore, and cast rules aside. Administration policies created the climate for Abu Ghraib and for abuse against detainees worldwide in a number of ways. Then he goes on to note, over the next several years, all key members of the Bush administration echoed dire warnings in speech after speech. A report was prepared by Special Investigations Division of the Committee of Government Reform by Representative Henry Waxman on the Bush administration's public statements on Iraq. It used a public database of all such statements by Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Secretary of State Colin Powell, and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. According to the report, these five officials made 237 specific false and misleading statements on the Iraqi threat in 125 public appearances, an average of about 50 for each disciple. In the month of September 2002, the first anniversary of 9/11 attacks, the Bush administration is on record as having made nearly 50 misleading and deceptive statements to the public. I remember very clearly one of those is Saddam Hussein would not let the inspectors back in. It was a total, total lie. The inspectors left because the place was told it was going to be bombed. But Bush repeated that lie at least three times after being told, wait a minute, you're mistaken here in your chronology. But again, the ubiquitous, incredibly powerful propaganda that is coming out of Fox News, out of TV, radio. You're right. There's some KPFA, what we're doing here. I mean, there are places where you can get alternative voices. But, you know, and it's not always sort of, you know, telling lies or misrepresenting things. It's often ignoring stories
that need
to be told.
Are you aware of Sonoma State's Project Censored?
No,
about 35 years ago, a professor started what ended up becoming a class. My producer Blue got a hold of the director of it, and we interviewed him about 6 months ago. And now it's a full blown class in the curriculum at Sonoma State. And each school year, they put together a book of all the censored stories, news stories that didn't come out.
Yes.
And it becomes a book, and they have an award show for who had the best, you know, story that didn't get out or didn't get covered by the mainstream news. And it's an amazing pushback. But again, it's not being covered by the mainstream. You have to dig and delve and get down in it. It's real funny because this country seems like it's really starting to divide along serious lines where you have people lining up on one side and people lining up on the other. It's not, you know, it seems more of people are getting more seriously, okay, I'm over here and you're over there, and what are we going to do about it? Now, I don't know what that bodes for the country, but
it bodes instability. I mean, again, I mean, it's the disappearing, the middle class is disappearing.
That's been going on for 30 years.
And yeah, but it's accelerated in the last eight or so, starting with Clinton and then through Bush.
Right.
I just finished doing some calculations of tax before and after income, for the top 0.1%, the top 1%, top 10%, top 50, and bottom 50 in this country. And you take a look at these pictures, and yeah, rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer. I think that's one reason for
concern.
Polarizing, yeah.
I got a question for you, George. I purposely, Saturday morning, before I came on my music radio show over here, I watched the first 15 minutes of the Glenn Beck rally live from the Lincoln Memorial at in Washington, D.C. It was on C-SPAN. And in there, Glenn Beck came out with his bodyguards. He's covered by bodyguards wherever he goes. And somebody said he carries a gun, too. I guess he's worried about getting killed. God forbid that Glenn Beck would get killed. But he came out and he said he wanted to restore the honor of America. And I thought to myself, when did America lose its honor? I mean, I got a lot of thoughts on how America's done stuff that I don't agree with, but I've never heard it put that way. But one thing that really puzzled me was, over the course of the entire weekend, I heard the news media report on it from CNN to Fox to MSNBC to other news outlets, but nobody stepped up and asked Glenn Beck where he thought America went wrong and lost its honor. Okay, and I watched a little bit more, and I heard Sarah Palin's speech, and it was all guided towards this theme of let's bring back America's honor, America's. And I was wondering, Where do you think, do you have any inkling about what they might have been talking about, what they meant about restoring America's honor?
Well, you also see, you know, you hear the talk of, you know, take our country back. Well, take it back from whom?
Right. Well, who took it away?
And what happened to Iran? And that's the trouble. Everybody has different ideas. I mean, yeah, you mentioned, you know, Abu Ghraib, torture and so on. I mean,
yeah, but they weren't talking about
this
that.
I think they're talking about since
2008, since the election. I don't know
What is it? 20% believe that Obama is a Muslim. I mean,
one out of five.
That's that 25 or that 20%. I think that seems to have been there for quite a long time. I'm afraid it may be growing, but the so-called religious right. I think there's overt racism is less and less, but it's found more covert and more subtle ways of being expressed.
How does it strike you that the news media didn't question any of this?
You're taking it back from immigrants, you're taking it back from homosexuals, you're taking it back from liberals. I mean, I wish somebody would explain to me. Language is a river, whatever, and words change their meaning. I think Herodotus says that back when. Maybe it was Thucydides. But come on. Liberalism, generous, open-minded. But look what the word's been hijacked, and it stands for commie, whatever, I often I sort of learn about how these words are being used because in the restroom, the men's room at the store, we have I always put up a fresh sheet of paper every week or so.
So they won't write on the wall.
So they won't write on the wall or, you know, carve things into the wall. Or
you get interesting comments
the
on
wall.
There?
It's kind of, you know, it's where the rednecks and everybody can sort of vent and against the liberals, and the liberals can vent against the rednecks. But
what kind of comments are you getting?
Able to keep my ear to the ground and find out what Sarah's thinking and
What are you hearing from your poster board?
Pretty scary. She's a toughie. That seems to be her most attractive feature is that she's tough. Well, okay, but I mean, I heard a little bit of that speech that she gave the other day too, and it was motherhood and apple pie, but always with a tinge. There's always sarcasm and a kind of whiny, call for what? There's nothing there, folks. It's really
does
scary.
It strike you funny that she gets so much play on the news media?
Yeah.
Because for somebody who ran for vice president, who was picked, she didn't really run for it. She was part of the ticket just because she got picked. Okay, after that, she quit her job as governor. She quit.
Yeah.
That should be something that would disgrace someone. But she kind of explained her way out of it. Then she became kind of a media figure. But it seems that the media is fascinated with Sarah Palin to the point where what I notice is, and I do watch TV, I got to kind of keep my finger on the pulse, try to watch more movies, but I do watch a lot of news. And I notice that they follow her around like they're little puppy dogs, just attached to Sarah Palin, and the mainstream media in this country has a fascination with her, but I just can't figure out what it is, because they normally write, you know, people who have extreme views, they pretty much write them off, or they'll ridicule them, interview them once, you know, and go, okay, yeah, okay, you think like that. But in this case, they're giving Sarah Palin press every day. They report what she tweets every day. Do we need to hear that?
I sure don't.
I know we're just two guys agreeing here, and there's no pushback, but this show isn't supposed to be a debate anyway.
She brings out the anger. And
but why do they cover her? Why do they give her so much press?
Yeah.
I know, it is kind of puzzling, isn't it?
Yeah.
As far as your feeling on what we're headed into here, there's a midterm election coming in November. Okay, we don't know which way it's going to go. I can't predict any of that. I don't even begin to even think about it. I'm going to vote. Then we have two years after that. We pretty much are, as of November, we'll be in the presidential cycle. Presidential cycle now is about 2 years long, right? It's not 6 months. It's not a year. They're running. There's guys in Iowa right now. But as far as your feeling on this, Where do you feel the country's headed right now?
Well, I'm very worried about these midterm elections. Yeah, because you look at history, it's the economy, stupid. And
if the right wing gets in, if the Republicans get in, okay, so they start taking stuff away, the economy's just going to get worse if they do that, right? We know this. What I think really should have happened was a bigger stimulus should have come down. The homeowners that were being foreclosed on should have been saved. Obama didn't even do that.
Yeah.
And so, okay, maybe it'll get worse. Maybe, I don't know. What, would they start another war? No.
Well, I noticed just recently we were upset about, well, what did we decide? That the South China Sea was... somewhere near China was in that we needed to. It was in our national interest to have a presence there. I believe I heard a Chinese diplomat saying that they might just find out that off the coast of Florida might be in their national interest to hang out there. But no, I do. I mean, war with China, right?
No, impossible. No.
But you know, rattle the sabers, try to justify the military budget, keep that money there rather than other places where it could be going that would really be in the national interest.
Right.
But the country don't need any more foo-foo bombers. We don't
You know. The country's broke. We know this, right? Yeah. We almost owe more than we're worth.
And I think I like Obama. I really think he's a guy who's trying. I think when he parachuted into that enemy territory, which is essentially what happened when he went to Washington, was that he, you know, partly it was, I think, bringing your enemies close, but partly just going with the guys that made the mess because they know how to make it and maybe they know how to undo it. But I just heard recently that some Republican group has called for the resignation of Summers and Bernanke, I think.
Really?
And there are a lot of really much more, I think Obama should know that by now, more capable people out there to advise on these matters who don't have this this history of being part of the of that oligarchy. Well-meaning people. Stiglitz is one.
Yeah, but he hasn't got a phone call. He won't get a phone call. He wrote the book, The $3 Trillion War.
Well, he's somebody that I think...
he'd be the perfect guy for the job. That's why they're not going to call him.
There are a lot of them. And I'm just hoping that now that that Obama's been in there for a couple of years, that he'll... Of course, I had these hopes for Clinton. I was hoping in his second term that he'd let his hair down or whatever and start going to work. But instead, I heard recently, am I correct about this, that he's apologized for NAFTA.
Good.
And that this whole free market thing is really partly responsible for what's going on now on the immigration front.
Right. That'll help all the out-of-work Mexican corn farmers who couldn't make a living off their crop anymore, so they had to turn around and come back up here to try to get some work. Uh-huh. But can one man, you know, it seems like a setup that we're put under, because we're put under this political system that props up one guy, one name, Clinton, Obama, Bush, McCain, one guy, one person, and then all our hopes and dreams are placed on that one person to take care of it. And this ship is headed in a direction, wherever it's going to end up, I don't know, but can one man turn this ship? I don't think one man can. I don't think a whole army of men could. The only people that could turn the ship is all of us collectively to get together, and public opinion would have to reflect and have to show that we want something. But do we even know how to do that anymore?
I don't know. I hope so. I hope people will, you know, look at the facts and look at who is responsible for where we are economically, which, by the way, is not just government, but it's a lot of us who, you know, just thought we could go on forever paying for things later.
But
there has been a tremendous shift under Bush of wealth. And,
sure.
You know, it's, yeah, there's... they always say that, you know, most Americans just won't admit that they're... you know, what the middle class is or the lower class. They won't think in class terms somehow. But that's really what's going on. When times are flush, you're not worried about the guy who's a different color, you know, next to you, whatever. But when times are bad, it's easy to blame them for your troubles. I live out in San Gregorio, which is sort of red surrounded by blue, or what is it?
A lot of ranchers.
A little pocket of ranching and farming. And there was a poll done years ago when Kathleen Brown was running against, was it Gray? No, who was she running against? The Republican for governor. But I remember the poll, and it had doctors, maybe 65% Democrat. The rest, dentists were pretty high. Republican, I think, was like maybe 85%. But teachers, 70-some percent Democrat. 99% of farmers and ranchers in California were Republican. 99%. Now, I think that may have changed a little bit, but I, over the years, there are fewer now of farmers and ranchers over there. A lot of them have sold out and moved. There's a lot of just getting all your information from Fox News. Fewer people are reading. I'm worried. These elections that are coming up, you hear about all the TV spots and so on, and I don't know. People talk about the computer as being a place where you can go and find different perspectives and then be able to compare and judge. But not everybody has a computer, right?
Or the time.
That's a lot of it.
Your store is kind of a crossroads because you get people from literally all over the world, people stopping in. It's kind of a tourist spot, but the music also brings a lot of people in. People coming from all over the Bay Area. So when you check the pulse on the people that come through your store, they're not just locals. They're not just ranchers. It's a good cross-section. I've been out there enough times to know that. What kind of feeling do you get on? And San Mateo County is a pretty good example of middle class America. It can be kind of affluent, but it's, I don't know, San Mateo County is.
Oh, I don't know. What did I just saw recently that is it the is it Meg Whitman is going after Brown? I get him confused.
Yeah, Meg Whitman is running against Jerry Brown for governor.
Ads in the Bay Area, even though Brown is something like 70% favored here. No, I think where we live near San Francisco, this area is pretty much of a bubble, it's pretty scary once you get out of there. But once again, how many hours of TV do you watch? It doesn't you know.
You think it's just TV?
TV and radio. I mean, whenever I can't get a station, if I'm outside of Santa Cruz or whatever, what do I get? I get Michael Savage. And incidentally, do you know, Bert, I have heard that the radio station that broadcasts Stanford's sports event, football games at least.
What station is that?
I don't know, but it's I believe it's an AM station. And I believe it also broadcasts Michael Savage.
Hmm.
Now, does the university really have to do business with...
Well, that wouldn't be the university. That would be the the sports department.
Has nothing to do with the university.
Well, it does, but each department is kind of autonomous unto itself. So if there was a bone to pick, it would be with them choosing, but I'm sure that they didn't pick a radio station.
Yeah, I may be mistaken on this, as I say, this hearsay, but
okay.
I'd be very curious to check it out.
Is it a sports talk radio station, or is it...
they broadcast the games. I don't know if they also, but...
Well, look into that next time you come on the show. Bring us all the facts.
Try to find out about that.
Yeah, we can.
You know, again, I mean, this is...
But Michael Savage is on the radio for a reason. If he stops selling soap, if he can't get advertisers for his show, he won't be on.
That's really important, and I think you might have heard about Target supporting this right-wing candidate back, I think, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a call for a boycott there, and that's really what has to be done, is the people who care have to stop. You know, I start, you know, speaking with their money, their pocketbooks.
How did you find out about the boycott of Target?
MoveOn.com.
Your email.
MoveOn. And, you know, another excellent source of sort of a meta survey of the media is the Extra put out by Fair.
Sure.
They have a piece they send out, and also there you can get them on the internet.
They do.
They survey the media and show mm-hmm. how stories are dealt with, and it's an excellent source of trying to find out what's going on.
And they do a great weekly radio show called Counterspin.
Right. Excellent.
Yeah, heard on KPFA every Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. That's a must read. Now let's get a little positive here, George. Where do you get your information? You said you don't watch TV. So
every now and then I'll watch Bill Maher on Friday nights, but he's been off for a while.
He's coming back on. Yeah, he took his summer hiatus. He So when you get up every day and you want to get your news, where do you go for that? You're a progressive left wing.
I look at the New York Times. The New Yorker has gotten really excellent stories recently.
Did you read the Jane Mayer article last week?
Missed
about
that.
The Koch brothers?
That's exactly the one I'm in the middle of now. I forgot who.
Oh, really?
But the Koch brothers. Yeah, the billionaires who don't like Obama. But yeah, no, this is oligarchy, folks.
Right. No, but where do you get your information, though? So you go to the New York Times, the New Yorker.
I look at the Wall Street Journal, and
you do, even though it's owned by Rupert Murdoch.
But and then I read the left wing pieces, the Nation, Progressive in these times.
Do you do most of this online, or do you subscribe to this
stuff? New York Review of Books is another very important source of
New York Books.
New York Review of Books.
Oh, okay.
They often choose. Important topics.
Do you get all this online?
And no, I actually subscribe to these, and I have a table out in the store for people to give and take. And so we have it's mainly leftist stuff, my stuff. But then every now and then we get the Ku Klux Klan or the John Birchers or whatever.
Really, out of the
leave
store
their stuff there, and that's,
really,
yeah. No, I mean that's what's important. Mill says it really eloquently. I mean, you have to allow all points of view pretty much because people learn by seeing truth collide with error.
That's
but I've pretty much given up on anybody over 20. I just to argue or to try to change somebody's mind on whether Obama is a Muslim or a commie, or, you know, I mean, it's pretty sad.
I met an African-American woman, believe it or not, it was a big shock, in Cupertino. She was handing out flyers for things she was working on, and she told me that the president wasn't a United States citizen.
Oh, yeah.
And she was African-American, and I thought, where did they get you?
Yeah. I spent a lot of time in Hawaii, and they finally, I think, had to pass a law or something because it was costing them a lot to verify the birth certificate.
Oh,
But, you know, before we go, I know it's getting close, I wanted to announce a conference that's going to be occurring, and I would encourage Condoleezza Rice and Mr. Rumsfeld and anybody who's interested to go to this. It's actually happening in Ben Lomond.
Oh.
The fourth Quaker Initiative to End Torture conference is going to be occurring at the Quaker Center, Ben Lomond, California, September the 24th through the 26th. And keynote speaker is Scott Horton, special guest. There are several special guests who will be talking about it. And
where in Ben Lomond?
At the Quaker Center. They have a building there.
The Quaker Center in Ben Lomond? Is there a website for this this event?
Let me see. End Torture website is called QUIT.
Q-U-I-T.
Q-U-I-T. So I guess
.org.
If you put that in there, you could...
just Google QUIT.
Or if you put Quaker Initiative to End Torture, I think they'd probably give you an address there.
Okay, and that's coming. What was the date on that?
September the 24th and 26th.
The end of next month.
And it's nearby. And I just would add that, interestingly, the Quakers are a really good source for information on electoral politics. There's something called the Friends Committee on National Legislation, Friends Committee on California Legislation, and they make recommendations and give analyses of various propositions, candidates, so on. Well, mainly propositions, FCNL and NLC, I guess, on the initials, but really worth paying attention to, because I think 99.99% of the time, I've thought they're right on what they recommend.
Mm-hmm. George Cattermole has been our guest today. George, I want to thank you so much for all your great work. You present amazing music every weekend out at the store. What's the website for the store again?
SanGregorioStore.com.
All right. And if you get a chance, folks, head out the end of Woodside Road. Just before the beach, you'll get to the store at Stage Road. And a lot of good stuff going on out there. I can recommend it highly. George, you take care of yourself.
Okay, thanks a lot for having me again.
Thank you. This has been another edition of Shedding Light on KZSU Stanford.